Welcome along to week three of Not Suitable for Broadcast. That means that I don't get paid for it because it doesn't go on the radio. Either way, if it did go on the radio, I'd probably get fired. Joining me, as usual, is my good friend, former producer and friend. Did I say friend twice? I did. Maybe I reiterated too much. It's AJ, don't speak till you're spoken to, right? You're not supposed to speak till I introduce you. So when I go, AJ Walsh, you go, hi.
Hi.
That's Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's like dealing with a child, I swear to God. So first, can we just deal with something very first, right? So earlier on, I get a text from AJ because we record this on Thursday night, right? You're hearing it on Friday. But earlier on, I get a text from AJ saying, what was it again you said in your text? I'll read it out. Hold on. This is very unprofessional. So AJ says, hey, Niall, I'm feeling a bit rough today, right? Now, the last time I heard that, I mentioned to AJ, it was a long time ago, from a producer who rang me, and he went, hey, Niall. And I went, you're ringing me to tell you're not coming in, aren't you? That you're feeling sick. I said, I've seen people in hospitals taking their last breath, and, you know, they don't even sound like that. Anyway, he turned out he had a pain in his stomach, but I made him come in the end. I said, that sounds like a very bullish thing to do, doesn't it? Anyway, look, he was fine. So AJ then relented very quickly when I said, that's a random piece of information you've just given me that you're not feeling, you're feeling a bit rough. But what was rough, by the way, AJ? What did rough mean?
Oh, I feel sick.
Like what do you mean rough?
I'm sick.
You look okay. You look fine.
I feel horrendous, but thanks for asking.
Okay. And anyway, and then and then all of a sudden came the kicker. Yeah, she said, I don't think I can do tonight. And I said, look, I won't be around on Saturday or Friday. So, you know, any chance that you do it tonight, drink a can of Red Bull and you'll be grand. And she went, okay. And she just, I mean, you didn't even try. You didn't try very hard, did you?
I was just checking, because if we could have done it tomorrow, I'd have probably felt a bit better. But it's fine. It's fine. I'm here.
I feel bad. You're actually making me feel bad now.
Don't worry.
Am I like a bully? Is this like bullying? Are you
a little bit, because I mean, if I had said that to you and you said that you weren't feeling well, do you know, when we were doing the show?
All right,
all
right. We'll see you tomorrow. Anyway.
Sit down.
I feel like I've coerced you into doing it. It's like coerce of control or something like that.
No. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. Look, we've a lot to get to, including, by the way, I want to talk about a gorilla later on, a very interesting viral video that's gone around about a gorilla. And it's really going to, it actually raises a huge amount of topics about men and women and relationships. But anyway, but the first thing I want to get to is something more serious. Did you see the video the other morning?
Unfortunately, yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to say to people, don't watch it. I've already watched it. And you can't unsee something like that. That's the problem when you watch it. And your curiosity gets the better of you. You see the image and you go, click. And you can't kind of unwatch it. So there's this guy on top of another guy, literally trying to behead him with a knife. Now, we can't go too much into the detail of what actually happened, obviously, because somebody's been charged, you know, and there is sub judice on it. But look, we all saw the video, so we can't deny that, okay? What followed, of course, you know, were all the accusations in relation to immigration and all the other stuff. And then, of course, Belfast and Northern Ireland being Northern Ireland, any excuse, you know, to set a few places on fire, which was absolutely appalling. And by the way, I condemn all forms of violence. That's not going to achieve anything at all. But it kind of has raised the debate, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's certainly raised the debate, yeah.
I mean, the debate about, you know, who we're letting into the country, why we're letting them in, the information we have so far in relation to this particular man was that he came into Dublin and then went, which is unusual, by the way, started the other way around, then went to Northern Ireland and was given permission to remain. Seemingly, according to the papers today, it was actually an online form he filled in. There was no face-to-face interview and he was given permission to remain, which seems a little bit ad hoc for the British to be doing, but that doesn't surprise me what's going on at the moment. So the whole debate is there. And then we have politicians saying that the riots happened because people saw the video and were enraged. And they now want to censor those type of videos online. They want tech companies to remove them. Sinead Gibney said, oh, that video was up there for at least 6 or 7 hours or whatever it was, which was enough to get people enraged and annoyed. Do you agree with censorship? Like that, when I say that sense, you know, this kind of graphic content.
Yeah, I mean, it is graphic and it shouldn't be there. But if something's happening, you see, this is something that when I was in university studying journalism, it's at what point do you cut it off? At what point is it censorship? And at what point are you actually protecting people? Because you don't want that sort of stuff available. You don't want kids to see it. But the fact is that there are videos going out literally every week now that you can't unsee. We said this, was it last week or the week before? There was another image out online that you couldn't unsee. There was also audio that you couldn't unhear. And it's happening constantly. But the fact is that it is real life and it is actually happening. So I don't agree with censorship in that respect. But yes, that is horrific. And I don't know, it's what they've tried to do is just make it so there's a couple of stills that you can see rather than having the full video. I don't know if that's any less.
I've seen the stills. I think BBC were actually using one of the stills. They've blurred out his face. I don't know why they blur out his face at this point, because everybody has seen who he is, although it's a kind of grainy image anyway. But their kind of notion, and the way I look at it is, I don't agree with censorship unless it's people obviously inciting violence or hate. You know, when I say inciting violence or crimes or whatever it happens to be. But their idea, like to me, I gave an analogy. It's like going to a mechanic and saying, there's a noise coming out of my engine. And the mechanic says, well, maybe if you were deaf and didn't hear it, it'd be fine. So this idea that, you know, the government are making a hames of immigration and immigration policy, but they want to then cover up the evidence of that. And this is clearly evidence that this individual shouldn't have been in Northern Ireland. He shouldn't have been anywhere. He shouldn't have been let into any country, because clearly he's deranged. So, like, and they just want to cover up the evidence. They don't want people to see it.
Yeah, that's the way I feel about it. And I do think that the BBC did do the right thing by blurring out a face and just showing the still, because that's what they should have done. And that's what you should do as a journalist. That's what you would do. The fact that it's available online is just where we're at. It's just where we are in civilization, in our world, technologically, that sort of stuff is available because we do have social media and it is actually happening. So we should... It happened and we should see it. Now, to be honest with you, it is very grainy. And when I first saw it, I actually thought it was something. I didn't think it was something current. I didn't think, I didn't know what it was. So I kind of just almost dismissed it. And then I saw it again and again. And then it was like, oh my God, this is actually happening. This has actually just happened. And that was it. Then the rest is history over the last couple of days and what's ensued then with the violence that we've seen and people being burnt out of their homes, families and children having to go into hiding. And it's really, really scary. And it's scary and it's an awful situation. There was a man talking this morning on Sky News and he's in hiding with his family. His house was burnt out. He had a 2-year-old child and I think another young child as well. And they had to escape their home. And he's lived there, I think he said since 2013, he's lived in Belfast. I think he's from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And these people are scared. They're really afraid. And I don't know now if it's going to be another night and another night and another night of violence. And it's exactly a year since the last bout of violence or the protests up there.
They kind of go one step too far, don't they? For whatever. Yeah. I mean, I know it happened in Dublin 3 years ago as well. You know, in O'Connell Street that time. But they go one step too far. I mean, it's coming up to July 4th now where there's usually some level of violence anyway, and the police are kind of used to dealing with that kind of situation. And the police up there, in fairness to them, deal with those kind of situations quite well.
They're equipped for it, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a kind of stand-back attitude, wait and see what happens, you know, and then hopefully. But the problem is, like, they're really, if you look at all the coverage, you know, be it on GB News or Sky News or BBC, they're kind of... replaying the same bits over and over again of a bus on fire, a car on fire, a house on fire, a bus on fire, a car on fire, a house. So it's the same footage just over and over and over again. There's very few people actually at the protest. There's like only a few hundred. And these are all, a lot of them are teenagers. And they all have their faces covered in masks. By the way, the irony of the Sinn Féin were given out about, you know, the violence in Northern Ireland, and rightly so, they should be condemning it, but they're saying, you know, that these violent people, it'll achieve nothing, these violent people going around with masks on their face, coming from a party that was responsible with the Provisional IRA, who constantly wore masks all the time, and when they were committing acts of violence as well, although some people would say they were freedom fighters, whatever. So, I mean, but it doesn't really achieve anything. It's not, it just makes it worse, because then it moves the focus away from the failings of government to the protests. And these are really just a fringe element of a few hundred people who don't care about immigration, who don't care about government policy and politics, and probably will never pay a penny tax in their lives, a lot of them. And, you know, all they're doing is intent on criminal activity.
Oh, totally. And like you say, it takes the focus off the real issues. And people aren't talking about the real issues now. All the coverage is the violence afterwards, the fires, the gurriers, basically. Mm-hmm. I was up in Belfast in, was it 2024? Yeah, I believe it was 2024. And it was when there was other riots up there. And it was the majority of them teenagers. I can tell you that I saw with my own eyes. The majority mm-hmm. of them were teenagers, and they're just chancing their arm.
Yeah,
just, you know, they're just out, just starting trouble, making trouble. That I don't actually think they even care about the issues, the political issues or anything.
I don't think they know. I don't think they're educated enough to know the individuals involved in this kind of thing. They don't understand. They probably don't even understand the history of Northern Ireland.
It's just now something's popped off. Oh, let's go out and, you know,
wreck the place.
Some,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think anything will be achieved with this? Because I've heard on BBC this morning, I think it was BBC, and GB News and a couple of others, they were talking about in Britain, some politicians have suggested putting a border back between Ireland.
A hard border, yeah. And that's what I've Ireland. Heard a lot of that.
Mm.
I've heard a lot of that today.
Do you think...
And I want to ask you what your opinion was on that. Because yes, that it's been spoken about quite a bit today. So I wanted to know what you thought about
that. Well, there's 300 miles, probably 300 or 400 roads that go from Northern Ireland into Ireland. Or the Southern Ireland, and so there's haters out there will say, no, it's all Ireland, what are you fucking talking about? But realistically, you can't stop it. I mean, even during the Troubles, when the customs were there and, you know, they were trying to stop people from, you know, importing goods and smuggling and all sorts of things, they couldn't stop them, you know, and, you know, they get paid off. And I remember somebody had mentioned to me there was an outpost in one particular place where one of the roads went into Northern Ireland, and they had set up at the customs or wherever it was, had set up an outpost of the British soldiers, and sure, the IRA kept blowing it up all the time. You know, so they ended up just going, affect them, let them do it, you know. So I don't think, first of all, it's possible. I think you might reduce that illegal immigration, 80% of it, which is coming from the UK into Northern Ireland. You might reduce it substantially, you know, if you had a border at Newry and some of the main places, Derry and places like that. But would it be worth it? I wouldn't like to be the first man to walk out and put my hand up and stop a car. Because I think that's political suicide. Because all you're doing is turning the clock back 30 years.
That's what it feels like, yeah. And I mean, I've always been strongly against having a hard border ever go back in. But I won't deny that now, over the last couple of days since this has happened and since I've heard the arguments for it, I'm like, oh, maybe it would actually help. But like you say...
Oh, I think it would help.
Would you want to be the first person to go out there and stop a car? No. And it would feel like we were going backwards for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Republicans in Northern Ireland, nationalists, they wouldn't be happy to see a border because it divides the two countries. I mean, the two countries are technically divided anyway, but there is no physical line. But once you put the border back, there is a physical line. I don't know whether you're old enough, AJ, to remember when the border was there and when you had customs and British soldiers. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I do remember. Yeah, yeah. I was very young now, but yeah, I do remember because we used to go up and visit friends up in Newry and we used to have to stop at the checkpoints. But yeah, I don't want to go back there. No way.
Mm. I remember at the time, actually, I was working. I was doing a gig up in Northern Ireland at the time. And the British, so you'd go to the first checkpoint, which was the Irish police and the customs. And then 100 yards up, you had the British soldiers and they would stop you as well. And I used to always, from one of the nightclubs I worked in, I'd get a couple of six packs of beer and give them to the British soldiers just so they wouldn't hassle me. So, and they go, oh, all right, thanks. Because they were only nine. Like, you have to remember, right? And I know people might hate me for saying this. I'm not a fan of the British soldiers, let's be clear about it. But these were kids. These were 19-year-olds. That were standing there and they were posted in Northern Ireland and told what to do. And I know people are going to say, oh no, you can't use the argument, I was only doing my job. I'm not using that argument. I'm just saying this was their first outing and they were sent to Northern Ireland on duty. And like, I gave them a couple of cans and they just waved you on, you know, or whatever. Like, there was some nasty shit happened. I mean, I was stopped by the RUC one night coming out of the gig. I think three RUC members had been killed that day. And oh, they put me over the bonnet of the car, called me a Fenian bastard. I had my record boxes. It was pissing rain. They started searching through all the record boxes. Eventually let me go, but I was terrified. I'll never forget it.
Yeah,
and this is going
scary,
back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is in the late 1980s, I think. And it was absolutely terrifying. It really was. Anyway, I think this will just go away. It'll be like Henry Novak. But this kind of took the attention off the Henry Novak case. But I think that it'll just be go away again in 2 or 3 weeks' time and nothing will actually happen. And the Irish government will do nothing. I know they're looking in the online there. Somebody had mentioned they're closing Mount Street, which is the iPad Centre, and they're moving the central hub now to City West, which will be kind of iPass central now. I feel sorry for the residents of City West, by the way, who have to put up with this. So everybody claiming asylum will all have to go to City West. I can't see the problem getting better. EU migration pact is going to make it worse. And I don't know where we're going to go from there because the government are just not listening.
Yeah, I mean, we've missed that. We've missed the immigration pact. We can't do anything about that now, can we?
No. Nope. Not now. No, not at this point. Yeah, they should. They voted in the Dáil the other day. There was meant to be a debate in relation to it. And they voted, like, this is how funny this Irish government is. They voted on should we have a debate before they even talk about anything else. And they voted against it. And it wasn't a landslide. It was only a small majority. But they don't want that because Micheál Martin doesn't want complications before the EU presidency, which is only a few weeks away. And the last thing he'd want is a complication of the relation to the EU migration pact. That's not going to look good for Micheál. Because remember, all these politicians are self-serving. They're not really interested in us. They're interested in keeping their jobs, looking good to their buddies in Europe and being part of the big rich gang. That's all it's about for them. But for us, it's a lot more than that. We're the citizens and have to put up with it. Anyway, on a lighter note, we'll come back to more serious stuff. But on a lighter note, a gorilla video has gone viral. I sent you the video, right?
I watched it, yeah.
His name is Komosa, and he's at the Japanese zoo, and he's become an internet sensation after being filmed sitting alone, appearing in deep thought following an apparent disagreement with his mate. So if you watch the video, the first part of the video is him running out of their little house, which is obviously behind bars in a zoo. But it's done well. It's a nice little enclosure, and they have their own little house. And he's running out, and she's running after him with a bush in her hand, and she's baiting the living shite out of him as he's running out. And he's looking back at her like as if I'm saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And he goes over into the corner, and he sits there looking over at the door. And it's incredible to watch how human he looks, scratching his head, looking over as if to say, oh, jeez, I'm fecked now. Shouldn't have done that. I'm not getting back into the gaff now. That's the end of sex for tonight. And he has this real male kind of thing going on. I mean, and everybody's trying to guess what he did wrong. Somebody said he left the toilet seat up or he didn't empty the dishwasher properly. So, as a woman, what is it about you women that you put men into the doghouse for the least reason? I had a caller in the air one day. She said she wasn't speaking to her husband for 2 days. I said, why? She said, because he came home with the wrong beans. He knows I don't like the ones with sugar. I'm going, what?
So she wouldn't. I think that's more, it's not about the beans. It's the fact that he hasn't listened, he hasn't paid attention, and he's gone off and done the wrong thing. And I think it just says so much more than just you've brought home the wrong beans. It's just like, you don't pay attention. You don't even know what I like, you know? And I think men can just be very lazy in that respect. And they just are like, huh? And you're like, oh, for God's sake, it was a simple thing that I asked for, or a simple thing that you had to do and you messed it up. I think that's what it is. And I think it's all also a massive buildup of things, little things all the time. And then there's the one thing that broke the straw that broke the camel's back. And then that's it. And then you're in the doghouse. And then you're like, and then the man can't understand. It was all of these things that led up to this point. They can only see the one thing that you got angry about. So that lady that was talking about the beans, it's not just the beans. That's a bigger issue. There was more going on there. It's not just the beans.
Like, what's the maddest argument you've had?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know.
Are you mad? Like, are you a bit mad?
No, I'm not.
Maybe I should ask Louis, your husband, that question.
Yeah, we'll call Louis down, but he would tell you I am. But he just, honestly, sometimes I do be pulling my hair out. Like,
leaving the toilet seat up?
No.
Are you that petty?
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't do that. It's just other stupid things like putting the bin out, or this is disgusting, but he'll go out and pick up dog poo and just leave all the bags out in the garden. And then I'll go out and find the bags.
With the poo in them.
And I'm just like, would you not have disposed of them properly? And he was like, yeah, well, at least I picked up the poo. I'm like, no, because you didn't do it properly.
Well, in fairness, now I give out to him for that too, if he did that as well.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
I don't know. Well, maybe I must be perfect because Karen really doesn't give out to me about anything like that. So I must be perfect.
I think she probably, I don't know. Does she do a lot for you though? She does a lot, doesn't she? I get the impression.
But Jimmy, what impression do you get there? Describe this impression you're getting.
I feel like she just does everything.
You've kind of witnessed that, have you?
Oh, no, I just feel like that's the case. I just feel like she just does everything and you don't have to worry about it, and then she does it. That's what I think
That's
anyway.
because when you were producing the show and I used to be on Zoom sometimes doing it remotely, you'd see her providing me with tea and biscuits. And when I was sick, checking my temperature.
And making sure your dinner, you've had your dinner, and sending you in snacks and everything.
But I do a lot of stuff for her too. Like we work together. We're a team. We work
Good
together.
team.
Yeah, but I do make mistakes, and I'm sure she does too. I can't think of any offhand, but I'm sure she does too. We both make mistakes. But if you start, oh, I'm not talking to you for 2 days over something stupid, your life's too short.
Yeah,
Do you
I
know what I
think
mean?
silent treatment, I think that's a bit, I don't know if there's something about that. It's like a narcissistic kind of tendency, isn't it? You have to
I
give
hear
someone
people saying
silent
that.
treatment. I'd rather have an argument.
I do. I hear people saying that, oh, I haven't spoken to her in over 3 days. I'm in the doghouse. I go, why? You haven't spoken to your wife in 3 days? I remember years ago, a mate of mine, and I was chatting to him, and I was on the way home from work or whatever, and he was in his car too. And I says, oh, where are you going? He says, oh, I'm just heading home to her. That's the way he worded it, right? Heading home to her. And I went, all right. And he went, oh, for fuck's sake, like, to go home to her now. I go, why are you married to her? Like,
Absolutely.
why would you be not looking forward to seeing your wife? I don't get it. Just leave her so, if you're not looking forward to seeing her. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair because, as well, let's say that man, his missus doesn't know that that's what he's thinking. She thinks, oh, I'm in a loving relationship, everything's absolutely fine. So he's completely gaslighting her, And I don't think that's fair. And I see that quite often. Like I know one guy who is waiting for his daughter to be 15 and then he's going to leave
And
because he can't stand your, he can't stand her, can't stand the man.
does she
And
know?
I, no, she doesn't know. And I'm like, that's, and then you see them together and they're fine. And he's like, no, I'm
Just
leaving,
tell
thanks.
her. Just
I
tell her, like.
know. That's so unfair because he's trapping her in this relationship.
Well, I mean, why
And
can't he
she
just
thinks
sit down
everything's
with her and
fine.
say, why can't he just sit down with her and say, look, I didn't want to have to say this to you, but look, I don't think, look, you're great and you'll be best mate and everything else, but I just don't love you like that anymore.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
actually get it sorted, and then she can
Can
move
we
on with her
work?
life. He can move
Yeah,
on with
can we work
his.
together here for the daughter? Can we stay maybe in the same house together, just do our own thing, for the sake of the daughter, or something, come up with some arrangement? That's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's bad. It's really bizarre, and you're just completely gaslighting them. That's why I don't actually see anything wrong with like an argument or a missus telling their fella off or anything like that, because that's healthy, I think. And the beans thing and telling them off over the beans, that's healthy. That's you're getting it off your chest.
Three
Silent
days. Three. She
treatments
wasn't
and
talking to him
talking
for
behind
three
their backs and
days.
all of that, I don't
Three
like that.
days. 3 days over the beans.
Nah. Nah.
No? Okay.
Nah.
Speaking of toxic
No,
relationships,
I wouldn't mind telling them off, but
what's the longest that you haven't
yeah.
spoken to? What's the longest you haven't spoken to him for? Can
About
you?
5 minutes.
That's
Because I
okay.
never shut up, so
Yeah. You just can't resist it. I'm not talking to you. Oh, by the way, how'd you get on work today? Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
I've never myself and Karen have never done that. I'm not talking to you business, and because she'd probably tell you I'm the type of person, I can't have an argument with her. I don't want to argue with her. I don't want to fight with her, and because I just love her so much, so I don't want to be in that situation. So if we have a disagreement, we sort it out straight away. I couldn't go to sleep on a disagreement because I'm like, I think worst case scenario. I've heard of mates that I know, people who have died quite suddenly. I remember a friend of mine worked in a nightclub. He was a manager. He was only 41 years of age. And I was chatting to him on the Saturday night. And I was there again the Sunday. Went to the Sunday. I said, like, where is he? He's dead. I said, what? I wasn't chatting to him last night, which is a real Irish thing to say. I think
Oh
he
my
was going to tell
God.
you. But he was having a shower, walked out of the shower and had a heart attack.
Oh
You know,
my God.
and he was only married 3 years. He had a young daughter, only married 3 years. But I always think, like, imagine having a row with somebody that you really love and you've got on great with for 20 years of your life. And then you have one row one night and you're not talking to them. And they drop dead. So the last thing they remember is that you weren't speaking to them. Could you
Yeah,
imagine that?
well, yeah, but they're dead. It's left. It's you're the one that has to suffer
No,
then.
but I mean, the last thing you'll remember, the guilt you'll have knowing that you weren't speaking to them, that the last thing you said to them was, oh, shut up, I don't want to talk to you. You know what I mean? Or something mad like that. Wouldn't yeah. that? And you really love them, and you loved every bit of them. But that particular yeah. moment,
and they do that. Say never go to sleep on a row or whatever. But sometimes, if you have a massive row, sometimes it is better to sleep on it because you're being unreasonable, you know. So I do find that I'm just like, oh, piss off! I'll go to bed, and then the next day it'll be grand. So yeah, like I mean, sometimes I have gone to sleep on a row just because I can't be arsed.
Poorly.
And I need to, you need to get your head together then, do you know? And you can with fresh eyes and a fresh head, and then you're like, actually, sorry, I was being an absolute prick last night.
Yeah, but back to the gorilla, and it's astonishing. I don't know whether you've ever watched gorillas, like their movements, their reactions, they're so human. Like it's just incredible to watch, isn't it?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it is. It's weird, actually. I was watching, I thought it was AI when he was sitting there. And I was, it is. It's mad to think how closely related we are.
Like he's scratching his head and then he's looking over to the side eye and it's like, God, am I? And you can almost tell what's going through his head. Like he's just really pissed off that he's been chucked out of the house. Speaking of in the doghouse, Lewis Hamilton, the race driver. God, you know, poor Lewis, like he doesn't have an awful lot of money, only 570 million, right?
Yeah, bless him.
Yeah, and his girlfriend, Kim Kardashian, which she got 1.6 billion, right? So he's in an interview and he says, I don't think people should be allowed to be billionaires. Now, remember, this is the same man who's living in Monaco because it's tax-free, he pays no tax whatsoever, apart from whatever he gets in the UK. So he's, forget about, leaving aside the hypocrisy, we talked about it during the week because it was worth talking about. It sounds a bit anti-capitalist, but do you think people should be allowed to amass anything more than £1 billion?
Yeah, I do. I do think that there should be no limit on what you can amass, but there should be some sort of contribution that you have to make. You know,
a contribution to what? Charity or something?
Yeah,
or?
Charity contribution.
But they most of them do. Most of them.
Yeah, they do. Was he talking about himself? Like, is he thinking
I mean, he's worth, if that was the case, he'd be giving that about his own girlfriend because she's worth over £1 billion. He's worth something like 750 million. So, I mean, and he walks, have you seen him? He's like, what an arsehole. I saw a video.
I haven't actually seen him, no.
He walking around Monaco with like a cape on him, like a king, and top of the range Ferraris now. And he has a big yacht and all the kind of trappings that I'm fierce jealous of. But he walks around like just like an arsehole. Like, look at me, I'm very rich. You know what I mean? But anyway, in the interview, he said, he was talking about wealth and you know, and obviously admitting that he was quite wealthy. But he doesn't believe that people like sort of Elon Musk or Bill Gates or these kind of people, these top 20 rich list, they should exist. There's 3,000 billionaires in the world who have roughly $37 trillion.
Wow.
Not incredible. That means they could give every single one of us about $3,000 each. 8 billion of us, 8 billion of us in the world, they could give us $3,000 each, roughly, I think.
Yeah, and I'm in my overdraft.
They could solve your overdraft and everybody's overdraft.
They certainly could. I mean, I'm all for that. Yeah, maybe that should be the tax.
But I mean,
that they have to pay.
Take Musk, who is technically the richest man in the world, but maybe not really because the sultans and people like that as well, that we don't know how much they're worth. But take Musk, for example, $380 billion, I think he's worth now since the kind of AI thing last year, the investment he got for AI. I mean, now, even if a lot of that's on paper, of course. So even if he sold everything off, SpaceX and Tesla and AI and all that, sold it all off, he probably have 40 or 50 billion personal wealth. For what? Shit, he's never going to spend it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. What's the point? I think what you're kind of saying is it gets to a point where it's like, well, you can't actually use that. So maybe you should have to pass that on to someone else to that point.
I know they tax it. I know. I mean, well, mind you, a lot of wealthy people are quite clever at avoiding tax. But and I know when they die, if they pass it on, they have to pay inheritance tax, you know, and then whoever they pass it on to a kid. And when they die, they have to pay out, you know, another 30% inheritance tax. So eventually the government get a lot of it over the course of a few generations. But still, I'm not an anti-capitalist. I'm not a socialist. I do believe in capitalism, so it's really hard for me to say this. But when I look at him worth 280 billion or whatever, 380 billion or whatever the feck it is, and then somebody else, you know, is poor and has nothing and is, you know, fighting every day to pay bills and stressed out and people who've taken their own lives because they have enough money to pay bills. I go, there's something unfair about that gap between the wealthy and the poor, you know?
Yeah, no, there is. And I mean, it takes to walk down somewhere like Skid Row or something like that in LA, and you just go like, whoa, this is absolutely insane. There's people that have absolutely nothing. There's people that are suffering on the streets, and then there's people that have that amount of wealth. And yeah, like you say, it is really difficult when you do believe in capitalism, because I don't want there to be a cap on what you can earn. I want to be able to go, and I want everybody to be able to go and reach their maximum potential. But then when you look at that and you think about that, you're like, wow, what is it that we're doing wrong? But what is the alternative?
Like I don't want people. I seen the lottery there was worth 170 million euro during the week. Like that'd do me. I'd be okay. I'd be
I'd be
okay.
happy with that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
like I don't want any more than that. That'd be plenty for me for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? I don't need to leave it to anybody, so it's plenty for me for the rest of my life. I'm quite happy with that. That'll get me a nice house, nice car for the two of us. You know what I mean? We could live our lives, relax, do one podcast a week, maybe.
Would you still do the podcast?
Yeah, I would. I'd do one a week,
Yeah.
like for the crack. I'm
Yeah.
telling you,
Yeah.
I'd probably be a roundup of how I spent my money that week.
Yes. Yeah. I'd tune in.
Would you? By the way, speaking of toxicity, we got an email during the week that we talked about, and it was from a woman who said that her husband was seriously depressed. He'd been in the same job for 20 years. His boss was a dickhead and was bullying him, but he didn't want to leave because he had the security of the job, and he didn't want to take the chance of, you know, trying to get another job or going alone or going out on his own, or because he had mortgage and bills and kids to feed and all the rest. And she was brokenhearted for him because she said she's heard her boss belittle him, disrespect him. On the phone, she's heard him, the way he speaks to him. And this guy's obviously a little bit timid. And she was saying, I feel like I should actually go into the job and do something about it myself and say something to him. Now, some people agreed. Like, I remember one of the callers, Dave, came on and he said he actually did that. He said it was my wife. And she was getting a hard time working. He said, I went in and had a word with the boss. Basically told him, if he didn't stop, I'd break his fingers. Well,
What?
a bit
My
blunt.
God.
Yeah. But,
Jeez. Wow.
like if your other half was having problems, you know, with an employer, was work with an employer, and you knew the employer was abusing them, you know, not physically, obviously, but, you know, psychologically abusing them and disrespecting them and belittling them in front of people, would you do something? If they weren't willing to, would you do something about it?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think I would. I think that's a difficult situation, but I wouldn't get involved personally because that's their relationship with their boss. It's nothing to do with me. No, I wouldn't do anything about it. I'd certainly say to my partner, I'd certainly hint, I'd certainly look at ways of, you know, people you can get in touch with. You know, there has to be employment, you know, ombudsman or whatever, citizens advice, that sort of thing. But no, I wouldn't get involved in that personally. I know that sounds really bad, but no.
Well, no, it
I
doesn't
think
sound
he has
bad.
to grow
Some
his
people,
pair of
some people
balls
said
and
the
go
same
and
thing.
sort that out himself.
Yeah, there was a couple of women on, and some of them said they wouldn't get involved because they would be worried it would make matters worse. Because then the next day, the boss would go, "Oh, look whose wife had to come in to defend him." You know, that's kind of, I suppose, this is kind of macho thing, isn't there? Lads don't want their wife coming in
Yeah,
to defend them.
definitely. It'd be so embarrassing.
But you're if you were having the same problem in work, he would go in for you, wouldn't he?
I don't think so. I don't think, no.
I think there's a
No.
double. No, I do think there's a double standard on it, because if I knew that somebody was, you know, bullying Karen, like I would have to deal with it. Well, you know, and if she couldn't, let's say she, for whatever reason she feels she couldn't deal with it, I'd have to go in personally and deal with it. I couldn't allow somebody to do that to my wife. So it's a kind of double standard, isn't it?
Yeah, I see what you mean. It is a double standard because I'm like, oh yeah, well, like I can see why you would have to do that. So yeah, there is a double standard, and I do think it's probably to do with that macho kind of thing. I feel like it's more reasonable to think that a man would go in and do it for a woman. That's bad, but I do. That is the way I feel about it. But
Yeah.
like, you wouldn't expect Karen to do it for you, would you?
No, I probably wouldn't, because I'd probably be able
No.
to. I'd be I, like, unlike this guy, I wouldn't get to a point where I was that depressed that I couldn't do something about it. You know,
Yeah,
I would
yeah.
eventually have to shove it up his arse. Have you ever been bullied, by the way?
In school, but not in the
Yeah.
workplace,
Yeah,
no.
okay. Okay, but I mean, we meet bullies all the way through our lives. You know, I mean, I kind of
Yeah.
have an issue in a sense that I've always had an insecurity. I have this kind of deep insecurity. You wouldn't think it, but I do.
No.
And I don't have a huge amount of self-confidence. Again, you wouldn't think it, but I actually do. You don't, just
No.
because somebody, like, if you look, I often wonder, like, when you look at people like Ant and Dec on television and all these people, you know, on television who are quite confident in television, what they're like in real life. And some of them are quite, you know, deep and quite reserved. And, you know, they're not the people you think they are. You wonder what's going on in their lives. But I've always had a bit of an insecurity. And I'd been a similar situation, you know, throughout my life, that when I had a job or have a job, I don't like change. I don't like too much change. You know what I mean? You know, taking a risk, because I've always felt that I have to provide, and having a salary, you know, a stable salary is important to me, as well as doing other things as well. But having that,
so that's
there,
part of your identity then, to have that salary. It's like, if you don't have that, you feel like you're not performing properly. You're not.
Yeah.
It's a part of you. Yeah.
That's, it's a man thing, identity, isn't it? That's a man thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, definitely.
I think that, you know, I always, people often say, is it nature or nurture? I do believe there is nature, you know, in our, I don't know, our DNA or whatever it is, that women are natural nurturers, men are providers. And it goes right back to Stone Age times. I don't believe that's nurture. I believe it's nature. And I do believe it's built into men, and it's built into women to be caring. I think men are probably less caring. I'm not saying they're insensitive or anything like that, but generally less caring. So that's why we see, no matter how much you try and force society to change, say for men to go into the caring industry or women to go into, you know, construction, it just doesn't happen.
It doesn't really work.
No.
It doesn't really work. No.
No.
And like men working in creches and nurseries and stuff like that. And always, the majority of teachers are always women. Every school.
No, that's changed. The teaching is changed. I mean, when I was a kid, they were nearly all male.
Well, because now it's a majority of women. Like, primary schools is what I'm talking about. I don't mean secondary, I mean primary. Yeah. That you'll have one male teacher in all of the primary schools that my kids have gone to. There's been one male teacher.
I know.
And it's usually the sixth class or the year six, you know, the last teacher. And then, the rest of them are all women.
Yeah,
all women.
Yeah, when I was young, it was primarily male teachers in primary school, but they were all bollockses. And the reason they were bollockses is because men don't have the same patience for young kids. They just generally don't. Whereas women are a bit more caring. Now, I'm not saying all women. Some women are absolute arseholes. But these, like, male teachers I had at the time were complete and utter bollocks. I remember, like, I have alopecia, right? And I'd lost all my hair at 9 years of age. And all the kids in the class used to slag me, right? They used to call me Patchhead and all sorts of names, right? And I was in the class one day, bawling my eyes out, right? And this teacher that I had at the time, he says to me, "What are you crying for, Boylan?" "They're calling me names." And he says, "Yeah, if you don't shut up, I'll pull the rest of your hair out." That was the kind of that was the kind of teachers we had in those days.
That's fucking awful.
I know.
Oh my God.
That's what he said to me.
Christ.
It's all in the book. It's got to be all in the book.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And I spoke to, he was a bollocks, right? He used to bring you up and he had the dowel off, you know, like a baby's cot in the dowels, the wooden dowels.
Yeah.
So it was off a baby's cot. It was a white dowel. And he'd bring you up, like, it was worse in the winter because your hands were cold, but he'd bring you up and he'd hold out your hand and he'd slap you, like, across the hand with the dowel, right? When he was doing it, he'd stick his tongue out because
he was
so angry.
He was getting into it.
And I always wondered if he used to go home and do it to his own kids. But anyway, and I remember talking to him. I rang him. I got his phone number in 2017, I think it was. And he must be in his late 80s, mid to late 80s now, right? And I rang him because we were doing that on the show at the time. We were talking about teachers and, you know, corporal punishment. And I rang him and I said, "Will you come on the show?" He went, "Oh, no, it's great to hear you. You know, you're doing really well for yourself. And I had to listen to your show." And I said, "Hey, will you come on?" And he says, "I'd rather not. No, no, I don't come on, talk about that." And I said, "Why did you do it?" I said, why did you beat 7-year-olds? You know, I mean, why did you do that? And you know what his answer was? Everybody else was doing it. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Everybody else was doing it.
And what he means by that is it was just the norm. And he thought it was fine.
Yeah, everybody else was doing it, so I did it. Now, he was the worst in the school. We just happened to get him. He was the worst. I did have another teacher, you know, when I was a little bit younger, when I was maybe 5 or 6, Mr. Conway, lovely guy, really nice. And he kind of took a bit of a shine to me, so he kind of protected me quite well. Because I was very shy. I was extremely shy in school. You know, I was bullied badly and I was really shy. Anyway, we've moved on from that. I don't know how we even ended up in that conversation. Anyway, so the other thing as well I wanted to talk about was the mortgage shake-up. So buyers can now borrow 5 times their income. This is the mortgage lender, Nua Money, is introducing a new product that will allow the first time buyers to borrow up to 5 times their annual income. Now, this is obviously to poor people trying to get into the housing market at a tough time when houses are really expensive. But are we going back to Celtic Tiger days? We swore we'd never do this again. Bank of Scotland were the first ones to do this in Ireland, to make, you know, loans cheap and everything else. And then, you know, the country was screwed because of all this. And then Bank of Scotland just left as soon as the shit hit the fan. So they were like the Tescos of mortgages at the time. But it looks like we're kind of going back down that road again.
No, I don't think so. I think we have to be realistic that people are spending a lot more on rent than what they would do by borrowing 5 times their income, guaranteed. Like the amount of money that I was spending on rent in Ireland, and we couldn't get a mortgage big enough to buy a house in the area that we were in. And we were paying more in rent. So it's just literally going to allow people to be able to afford houses in the areas they want to be in. That's all it's going to do.
But you're not loaning them too much money that they can't pay back.
No. They're paying it in rent anyway. So I think people are able to afford it. And I think the rates of people that are in arrears with their mortgage now has gone right down. I think the majority of mortgages are up to date. People aren't really in arrears. I think the percentages are pretty good. The statistics are pretty good in that respect. So I think it's a good thing.
I think what's happened, those statistics, is there was a time when I think it was like 66,000 mortgages in arrears or something ridiculous, right? But I think what's happened is the banks have recapitalized a lot of those. And not only that, a lot of those people are now paying interest only until they get into a better position. That doesn't fix the problem. That means they'll never own the bloody house. Or if they recapitalize, their 25-year mortgage is now a 35-year mortgage. So, like, I don't think all they've done is put a plaster on the problem there. And yeah, the numbers might have come down from 60 or 70,000 down to about 20,000. But those people are just being given a deal. And that just elongates the problem.
That is true. It's just extending the problem. But they have to do something because the rents are so high, Niall. Like, it's actually ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think people are hoping it won't be like that forever. Whereas if you're borrowing 5 times, if you're allowing somebody to buy a house who's not that wealthy, which is overpriced, and let's be clear, houses are overpriced.
They are overpriced.
We're buying them at a bad time. Because this happened in 2006, and houses were like 370,000 for a 3-bed in Dublin at the time, right? But they're even more now, right? And people were borrowing ridiculous money with mortgages of 2.5 grand to buy these houses. And then the market collapsed. And all of a sudden, your 370,000 house was only worth 150, and you're in negative equity. You know, and that's going to happen again. It will happen again.
What's your solution then? People just don't buy now because it's the wrong time? Our price is going to come down?
No, my solution is that the government needs to be doing more about the housing crisis. Because if the government were doing more and there was more houses, they wouldn't be able to charge what they're charging, supply and demand. It's the government's fault. It is the government's fault that housing is overpriced. And also estate agents. I'd bring in more regulations around estate agents. They're ruthless. Yeah. Because estate agents are falsifying prices and putting the prices up by pushing people into bidding more for houses. Yeah. I mean, you see houses being advertised for like 600,000. And by the time it's sold, it goes for 720 or 750 because the estate agents are lying to people. Oh, we've got an offer on that already. Well, they haven't. You know, pushing people into paying more.
Yeah, there's been houses. I think it was Crumlin was one of them that I was watching, and it went up originally for, I think it went up for 300,000, and I think it sold for 475. And it was just one of those, you know, the ex-council houses in Crumlin.
That was
one of the worst ones that I saw. I just happened to be watching it. But there's other estate agents now. You inquire about a house and they say, oh, go on our website. And you literally put in a bid on their website.
They have people bidding without
seeing the houses. And I witnessed that firsthand. I was like, oh, can we not go and see the house? And they were like, oh, no, we already have interest in it. You just go onto the website and put in a bid. And every bid that somebody puts in pushes up the price. So you've got people there that probably can't even afford to buy it, aren't even mortgage approved, putting in bids, pushing up the prices of these houses. And then that's bringing up the cost of the houses in that whole entire area. But you're saying you
agree with this borrowing 5 times. So you're borrowing 5 times for an inflated price on a house. You know what I mean?
Because I can't see the price of houses coming down anytime soon. Mm. So they're going to have to do something. And the amount that people are paying in rents is more than what they would be paying in their mortgage repayments. So people can't afford to pay it. It's not the best solution, but they have to do something.
Mm. That's crazy, isn't it? By the way, do you believe in, I'm looking at this here, Boogie to the Grave, a unique trend in Peru. I think we've seen this. You know, they're carrying the coffins.
That's AI, isn't it?
No, it's real.
No, that thing you're talking about is AI.
What? Where they're carrying the coffin?
Yeah, that's AI, no?
No, that's been around for years where they dance. That, I think in Nigeria and other places like that, they do it as well. They have the suits on. The lads have the suits on. And they're carrying the coffin and they're playing that music.
I thought that was AI.
No, it's actually becoming a trend now in Peru, and it's changing the way people say goodbye to their loved ones. Instead of traditional, you know, solemn funerals, you know, dancing undertakers are turning funeral processions into celebrations of life. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to be in a coffin at any point in my life.
I know. What's your plan then, Niall? You're going to be buried? In a wheelie bin. And then cremated and then sprinkled into
Cocoa Beach.
The sea in Florida.
Yeah. So the crabs can eat me. So that's the plan. I would hate the thoughts of being in a coffin and being buried underground. But, I mean, what's your thoughts on this kind of the singing and dancing undertakers carrying the coffin?
Yeah, I think it's really nice. I think it's lovely because you're celebrating the life rather than going and being all miserable.
Yeah. I mean,
there's
I know.
As bad as a funeral.
Yeah, they can be sad. You know what I mean? I know they can be sad because people have lost somebody or something like that. Have you got a plan? Did you talk to Louis about this?
No.
Why?
No. I'll just do the wheelie bin thing. I'll just do what you're doing.
Do you want to do it now just so as Louis hears it and he knows? No. Like, do you want like a basket or something or a wooden bag, a plastic bag or some Tesco's bag?
We had this conversation before. I haven't thought about this at all. At all.
No?
And you were like, no, you have to think about it. You have to.
Have you got a will?
Yeah.
That's okay. Well, you do need a will. Yeah. Mind you, if you're a husband and wife, you technically don't. But one just automatically goes to the other. But you don't want it to go to probate, so you're better off with a will.
I'm not married.
I know that.
Oh.
I didn't actually know that, in fairness. I don't know. But you're living together. You're living together. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
As my mother would say, you're living in sin.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Every night is a sin. But not
every night's a sin.
Not every night.
No. No, I promise.
Birthdays and Christmas. Every night is a sin. Poor Louis. Anyway, have you thought about how you'd like to, you know, but think about it now, like now that we're talking about it.
Yeah.
I know you haven't. Why? Is it something like, is it real morbid or something?
I think it's quite morbid, yeah. But I would probably, just because everybody in my family has always been buried, I'd probably just be buried.
Ah, oh, stop. Like, what happens if you're in the coffin and all of a sudden you wake up and you go, where am I?
Oh, God, that'd be awful.
Because that's very dark in here. Where the fuck am I?
Do you know what I always think of is that Kill Bill? Do you know Kill Bill 2? Have you seen it?
I know. I'm not a Quentin Tarantino fan, so I haven't seen Kill Bill.
But she gets buried in that. And it's a really freaky scene. But anyway, she gets out. It's amazing. But yeah, that's what it always reminds me of. Or Buried. There's a film called Buried.
Yeah, I know that one. Yeah,
that's really good. That's really good.
Ryan Reynolds. Yeah.
But yeah, that claustrophobia. Oh my God, it's awful. But no, I've never thought of, I might wake up or anything like that. I'd assume it would be a few days, if not weeks after you die, that you actually get buried. So no, I'm cool with that.
Well, in England, it's weeks after you die. Over here, we kind of rush them into the grave. It's like literally a couple of days later, you're in the ground. Quick. Yeah, where in England, they kind of hang around for weeks for some reason. I don't know what that's all about.
But 2 months sometimes, yeah.
Years ago, they were so concerned about this idea of people waking up because they didn't understand medical science very well and people went into comas and then woke up and they thought they came back to life. But what they would do is, and this is a true story, most coffins, particularly those of the wealthy, they had a bell. How did you know that?
Because I just remembered.
Yeah. So they had a bell on top of the coffin or on top of the gravestone. With a string going down into a hole in the coffin, and they tie it onto their hand.
Yeah, so if they woke up,
it would be ding, ling, 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 ling. Wouldn't it be like just your luck that you do that? And it'd be a bank holiday, and there'd be no one around. I'm running out of oxygen.
Oh my God! Yeah, if you're on a Sunday morning or something, but yeah, maybe you could just arrange a bell then, Niall.
But people have to, I mean, there was a shocking story going back a few years ago. I won't tell you which hospital it was, but a hospital in Dublin. And they rang the family to say, you know, oh, we're sorry, you know, your husband or brother, whatever he was, has passed away. Like, family were like, oh my God, where is he? You can come and see him in the morgue, right? So anyway, he was in the morgue and they went down to the morgue and he woke up in the body bag. He was alive. And they put him, there was murder. They put him in the body bag or put him down in the morgue. And he wasn't dead. He was still alive. Yeah, it's, I believe he's grand now. You know?
Still now?
Yeah, he's fine. Like, he was okay. Oh my God. Yeah, and they just thought he was dead.
That's horrendous. Sorry, I don't to laugh. Jesus,
I know, but it is kind of funny in a bad way.
It is. In a really bad way, yeah.
But a shocking story. Imagine, like, being told, you know, that your loved one is dead. And then it's, oh, sorry about that. No, they're not, actually. They woke up in the morgue in a body bag. You know?
Oh, my God. Well, there's a story. Jesus, there's some trauma for you.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Finally. Okay, now, we did talk about last week the kind of birth rate, okay? But I wanted to talk about Jon Snow, the newsreader. Oh. So, John, he's retired, obviously, but he now has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Him and his missus surrogated a baby going back 4 years ago when he was kind of 73 at the time. He's 78 now, so it's 5 years ago. She's 48. She's 50-something now, I think. And we had a conversation about, firstly, was that a selfish thing to do for the two of them? And secondly, do you believe that there's an upper age limit? And you know, in other words, when you get to 48, roughly, that's when women can't have children anymore. Like, you know, naturally, they have to get IVF if they want to have kids after that point because they've gone through the menopause or whatever. Do you believe it's selfish then to want to have a child late in life?
I don't think it's selfish to want to have a child in later life, but I think that by doing it, it can be a selfish act because look at that situation. He's got Alzheimer's now and...
Mm-hmm. Two kids, only a toddler.
Yeah, exactly. And that child now is going to miss out on having a dad. But I don't know. I feel very strongly about people having a choice on whether or not they want to have kids. One of my last child that I had, I was over 35.
That's kind of geriatric pregnancy, yeah.
Tell me about it. I know. And boy, was I made to feel like I was a geriatric. I have never felt older in my life, like in the hospital and that. And it made me feel even stronger that, you know, this is absolutely ridiculous at 35 years of age.
But that is ridiculous at 35, to feel like that.
Yeah, being made to feel like that. Like I felt awful. I was made to feel like I was irresponsible for having a child at that age. I was like, well, I thought I was fine. Like,
and what,
I
like
no
just
idea.
Like subtle little remarks. Geez, you're looking great for your age and all that.
It was awful. Like, it was really awful. And I was put like as a high risk and all of this. And well, it was awful.
But you were a high... No, hold on for a second. I mean, if you are 37 or 38 and you're pregnant, you are a higher risk, obviously. That's just biological. They're not having a go at you.
No, I know they're not, but it was awful. Like, they weren't nice about it. And I don't know now. I think that the statistics are changing and I think that it is shifting. Oh, I do think that it is shifting. And I think that women are able to have safe pregnancies and births till later. I definitely think that that's shifting. But a 58? But did you say she's 58?
Yeah, no, she's in her mid...
She was 40.
She was 48 at the time.
He was 48.
So she must be 53 now. He's obviously 78 now, or whatever he is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think
that child is going to go through. Child is going to go through so many emotions. So he's going to go through the emotion of missing his father when his father has no idea who he is anymore, because sadly he'll have dementia and be very sick. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he'll watch his father becoming, you know, incapacitated, possibly. Then he'll watch his father die at a young, while he's still at a young age. You know, and then he'll miss his father. There'll be the bereavement. There'll be all those emotions that a child should never have to experience at that age of their life. And I
mean, let's face it. Any child could have to go through those emotions because, you know, anything can happen at any age.
Yeah,
you
but you've
know.
Increased but the risk.
You've increased the risk if you're 78 years of age and you're having a child. You're a million times. You're increasing that risk 100 times.
You're going to hate me for saying this, right? You hate me for saying a lot of things, but you're going to hate me more for saying this. Mother Nature has decided that women can't have children over a certain age. And nature is a wonderful thing. Look at the animal kingdom, for example, and the way it works and how well it works. That by the time you get to 50 years of age, at the latest, let's say, you can't naturally conceive. And the reason is because you're not healthy enough anymore. You can't really run around after a child anymore. It's more difficult to breastfeed. It's more difficult to do all of those things to raise a child. So nature has decided This is the kind of cutoff point.
I agree with that. And I agree with listening to nature and letting that be the cutoff point. So, yes, I do. And but it's different for every woman. Every woman has a different expiry date, so to speak. So yeah, it is different for everyone. So if you can still conceive
naturally, expiry date.
And you still feel healthy and you're still fit, then you're fine to do it, I think.
I feel so very for women 50 years ago when they got to that age after the menopause. You know, they got all sorts of problems going on. They, you know what I mean? They kind of grew hair on their chin and they had osteoporosis and all that. I mean, HRT has changed that completely for women. You know, that whole, I mean, for most women who use HRT, it has changed all of that. It's women were kind of considered useless after the age of 50 when you go back centuries ago. They were useless. They were of no value in society because they've already did what they're meant to do, which was have children,
I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think if you go back, there were times where the older women were the crone and they were the ones with all the knowledge and people did look up to them quite a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that is a more modern thing where women over a certain age are just like, they're useless. They're past their best. I think that's a more modern issue than what you're saying.
No, I value women all the way through their lives. So I think it was awful that women were allowed to become unwell so quickly after the age of 50, because unfortunately hormones play a huge role in how we feel, our energy levels, our bone structure, everything. I mean, women ended up with brittle bones, you know, at a very young age, osteoporosis at a very young age. You know, their hormones level changed, so their libido fell apart, you know, which is an important part of life too for people if they're in an intimate relationship. All those things just happened to them and they could do nothing about it. Now there's an answer for all that. You know, now we can fix those problems.
We still definitely don't have a massive, we don't have a full understanding and doctors certainly don't know everything about women and as their hormones and as they get older and how to fix all that sort of stuff. There's still massive gaps there. There's still women suffering with endometriosis in silence. They're not treated. Mm-hmm. They just have to put up with pain and stuff like that. So it's not like, we've come so far. Well, we really haven't. HRT definitely has been a really great achievement.
It's a game changer, isn't it?
Yeah, it really has. But there is other things other than HRT as well, and it doesn't agree with all women either. It's not for everybody. Sorry, my microphone just keeps slipping down.
Yeah, that's because its hormone levels have dropped. I mean, you just can't keep it up anymore. That's what I was going to come to. When we talk about women, and just finally this week, we don't talk about men. We don't seem to care about men. Men go through a similar problem. And I know you're going to look at me now and go, don't give it up. Well, you just because women do something, you don't have to have it as well. Men have the andropause and we never talk about it. So when a man gets to the age of 35 or 40, his testosterone levels start to drop. His body doesn't produce as much testosterone. So the energy levels drop, the libido drops. In some men, you know, the erectile dysfunction, all those kind of things. And we kind of laugh it off, like, for God, just get over yourself. Men never go to the doctor about these things. And there's a fix for it. You can go to the doctor. The doctor, if he's a good doctor, will do a proper blood test, you know, hormone level test, and probably put you on testosterone or whatever it is that you happen to need. But men don't do it. For some reason, we just don't seem to talk about it. We don't advertise it. We don't have interviews about it. It's all about women and the menopause. I'm sorry, I'm not saying I don't care about women in the bottom house. I really do. I actually care more than most. My wife will tell you that I actually cared about her menopause probably more than she did.
Yeah, I understand. I've never actually heard about what you're talking about. And it is interesting because men don't, like you say, go to the doctor. They'll have something wrong with them. They'll be like, be grand. And then all of a sudden their foot's falling off. Yeah, I'll be grand. whereas women are like, oh my God, I need to go to the doctor. I've got something. And I think that that's a really good thing. And that has eventually, finally, maybe prompted us to finding solutions to some women's health problems. Like there is research going on now. But men just need to speak up more. I've never heard about what you're talking about. I don't know. I would assume that men go through some sort of similar hormonal thing. But I don't know, because men just don't talk about it. So
it is out there. No, don't be making excuses. It is out there. You just don't care enough to read about it. And I don't mean that. I'm having a pop at you, because most women don't care enough to read about it. And sadly, most men don't care enough to read about it either. So I'm telling you all now, lads, you can do something about it. If you find your energy levels are dropping, don't accept that. Women don't accept it. You know, so why should men? But the problem I find is there's no airtime given to it. We did a show actually on it going back about 2 years ago I remember I had a doctor on talking about the andropause for men. I've also had doctors on numerous times talking about menopause. So, but we just don't give it any airtime. We don't, if you don't see it in the papers, you don't see stories about it.
Well, let's talk about it next week.
Okay. Maybe I get somebody on. Maybe I get an expert.
Do. Get an expert, yeah.
Okay, well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. By the way, you're like one of these people who claims they're sick, but you're actually not, because you seem fine for the last hour, can I just say? And I know that sounds very bullish of me. You know what I mean? But you look grand. You seem fine.
Thanks.
Are you just holding it in till the end? And then as soon as it's gone, yeah, you kind of got to go,
Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. AJ, she'll talk to you next week. Listen, thank you very much indeed for joining me, AJ Walsh. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Niall.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.